Dr. Agnes Girardi shows off her ventriloquist skills. Picard says Raffi is too emotional. Don't do that, JL, trust me. And Elnor makes his first joke, and it really kills. Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton. What?
Oh, nice. Nice intro. I like
you. You guys, his joke was so funny. After he told it, he was literally dead. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was a good, good one right there. I like that one.
Yeah. We lost all our viewers just now. Today, we're doing a review of Star Trek Picard Season 2, Episode 3, entitled Assimilation. And this season is brought to you by our good friend, Mr. Grandpa One, a.k.a. Timothy Baum, who is celebrating Sir Patrick's Day right now because his birthday just happened. Happy birthday, Tim.
Happy birthday, brother. I know he's celebrating the right way.
Yeah, well, the reason we know that is because right before we hit record, he literally just popped on our Zoom and was like, having with a beer in hand, just wanted to say hello and spread the cheer. So happy birthday to Tim. We love that dude, and we couldn't do it without him.
Awesome.
All right.
Grandpa One.
That is the man. We also want to give at the top a special thanks to Brian M. O'Keefe. Thank you, Brian. All right. Let us have our fun today. First of all, Sirach Lofton, everybody, if you're just listening, he is wearing an awesome retro Poetic Justice shirt that looks sharp as hell.
Yeah. Shout out to Tupac. Absolutely. Bringing it back, the old school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they
I'm wearing my Lower Decks shirt because something I learned way back in the day, and I swear we'll talk about Picard in just a second, but I always feel like, first of all, I don't have a Picard shirt. I hope I get one soon. I guess that's a wink and a nudge right there, but I don't have a Picard shirt. But it's kind of like back in the day when you would go see bands. I learned way back in high school that you don't wear the shirt of the band you're going to see. Like if you're going to see Megadeth, I don't care how many Megadeth shirts you have. And I had like 8 of them. Don't wear a Megadeth shirt to the Megadeth concert. You can wear a Slayer shirt. You can wear a Metallica shirt. You can wear a Slipknot shirt, but don't be that guy, dude. So got to wear Lower Decks to the Picard thing.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, man. What'd you think about this episode?
Man, I loved it. There was so much to love. First of all, I thought it was so cool that they played the song California Dreamin'. I mean, it was a cover. It was definitely a cover, and it was a good cover. But I love that song originally by the Mamas and the Papas, and it instantly put me in a good mood. I get that they did it because of the relevance and also kind of like this bitter irony of like California Dreamin' when California looked terrible in 2024. it doesn't now. Boy, oh boy, 2022 California is totally different, right?
Yeah, no. The decline is actually worse than expected out here. But yeah, they captured it pretty well when they beam up to the surface and see the conditions that we're all living in. It's pretty accurate.
When they did that, did you notice like all the places? Like I was like, whoa, it's La Brea. Whoa, it's Santa Monica Pier. Whoa, Griffith Observatory, Malibu. You know, like I actually rewound it a couple times. It's one of those things where when you live somewhere, for some reason, you freak out when you see. It's kind of like if a comedian, stand-up comedian says, so I was back in Atlanta the other day and people were like, whoa, oh, Atlanta. It's like, what do you care? But we care. I don't know why.
Yeah, a lot of the things I recognize from downtown Los Angeles. And, you know, it's funny because I was just now occurred to me that they may have had to do some set dressing and designing for the homeless camp. But really, they didn't have to do that at all. Right.
Yeah.
They could just literally say, hey, guys, do you mind if we'll pay you $100? Do you mind if we film here?
Dude, but, I thought the same thing when I saw that and they had like the tents in the background.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm sure they spent $1 million
like building this. Yeah, it looked too clean.
And putting little McDonald's wrappers on the ground over here. Yeah. I'm like, you guys didn't have to. You could have just taken a stroll. Exactly. But whatever, we understand why.
I didn't see enough tarps and stuff, so I knew it wasn't completely accurate, or shopping carts. So I was like, wait a minute, this is a staged homeless encampment. You know, it's not as usually they're not as clean and pristine as the one they showed, which was actually pretty raggedy in itself. Right. But
the only real tarps I saw were the La Brea tarp bits.
Oh gosh.
That's an LA joke. There's a place called the La Brea tarp bits, which by the way is redundant, because if you know a little bit of Spanish, La Brea means the tar pits. So you're really saying the tar pits when you say the La Brea tar pits. No, you're saying
the tar pits.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, Rios would get it. He'd love that joke.
Yeah, Rios would get it. Which Rios? We're not sure, but one of the Rioses. But is it just me or these obliterating phasers? Is that a new thing? Because these phasers, when they were taking the phaser shots in the beginning, and the guys were like disintegrating essentially into just vapor. Is that a new thing? Because I don't remember seeing that before, that effect.
Yeah, you know, it could be a combination of anything between, you know, just new phasers, because we're 20 years into the future from what we've seen previously, and or a higher setting. There was this really gruesome scene in The Next Generation early on, I think, where this guy gets like vaporized and you like see his skull and he explodes. It's like really weird and unnecessary. But yeah, usually they just set it to stun. Usually we don't see any of that stuff, but yeah, this time they're just like, they're going for it.
Yeah. I thought it was a kind of a cool effect. I did enjoy the effect. And it kind of had that red chemtrail that it left behind as it was, you know, vaporizing. I thought it was cool. Mm-hmm. So it was one thing that caught my eye.
You know, I had a lot of good laughs in this episode. First of all, there is the non-laugh, but adorable scene where Seven of Nine, Annika, she beams onto the planet. And the little kid says, "Are you a superhero?" And she says, "Can you keep a secret?" And here I am going like, of course she's going to say yes, but she didn't even say yes. She just winked. And I'm like, better, good. That's very nice. Very, just so cute though. I love that.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of funny parts. Like when Rios, he finds out that he's missing his comm badge. And I'm sure the line just says shit, but he goes, shit. Just like that long. I don't know why, but I was like, a good delivery, man. Good delivery.
Yeah. I didn't notice that, but I thought Rios had a couple of moments there that were great. And the doctor who played opposite him, I thought she was really good too. She played some beats that were really well done, in my opinion. One of them was when she kind of says, "Hey, tell me a story about your past." And he's like, "Yeah, my mom, you know, I was 8 years old."
And brilliant.
And she's like, "Yeah, cool story." Like, didn't even care about any of that stuff, right? Was just trying to distract him and break his finger back. I thought that was a good scene, and I thought she delivered it really good. Like, you know, mm-hmm. Cool story. Yeah, whatever. you really bought that one.
She's probably thinking, boy, this guy has a serious concussion. Either that or he thinks that I'm going to fall for that line. Oh, you're a fighter ship at pilot at 8 years old. Got it.
Yeah, she was pretty amazing. The other one that I thought was great, she said, "Forget the guitar, you're a genius." The way she said it, she delivered that line really well. Her emphasis on the accents was just perfect. So I just thought she played the kind of sexy girl that gives you crap and just makes, you know, gives you a hard time. And I thought she was great at that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they kidnap her into the cast.
She'll be part of the whole season, guaranteed. She's gonna be part of the whole season. She immediately, and I'll bet you I'm not the only one who watched this that felt this way, she immediately gave me Sarah Silverman vibes. And I know, Srock, you're thinking this guy has his own concussion right now, but oh no, you're not, because
I know the kind of humor. Yeah.
Well, because she was in, Sarah Silverman was in a two-part episode of Star Trek Voyager, in which they come down to the surface of modern day Earth and they go to Griffith Observatory. They go to Santa Monica Pier. So as soon as we saw Griffith Observatory and Santa Monica Pier in this episode, my first thought was, oh, just like in that Voyager two-parter, I think it's called Future's End. And Sarah Silverman stole the show.
I actually watched that episode.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Albeit, because it was on the cruise recently.
Yeah.
The cruise was just playing all of these episodes. And so I was flipping through the channels watching original Star Trek.
That's so cool.
And I caught this particular Voyager episode because I said, what is Sarah Silverman doing?
I know. And she steals the show. She was so good. This was back when she was a relative unknown, too. This was in the 90s. And everybody was like, oh, this girl's got spunk. I like her. And so when we met this lady, I forgot her name, but she immediately made
me. Dr. Teresa.
Yeah.
And I thought the other vibe that I got from her, just her beauty and her chops and her accent, I thought reminded me also of Penelope Cruz from back in the day. So a little bit of Selma Hayek.
I got Selma Hayek. Yeah, that's where I thought you were going with that, was Selma Hayek. Yeah.
Yeah. So she has that kind of an it factor in her presence on screen and in her delivery and her lines. Mm-hmm. So I think she's going to have a very successful career going forward. And I definitely was like writing hearts all around her name. Like, I love her.
You're like rewinding it to pronounce Teresa just perfectly. You're like, Teresa or Teresa? Okay, got you, girl. Let me draw some more hearts around it. Can we see the hearts around the name?
Sure. I'll just do that little boom. There's Dr. Teresa's clinic, and we got a couple of hearts around here just floating around. You know,
I love it.
You may have seen my other notes where I said the beam job sucks, or the what sucky BJ skills. So I was talking about how they beamed Rios down onto the surface, right? Like, where was he beamed to? The fire escape?
Yeah.
Outer railing?
In the air.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, yeah, there are a lot of thoughts that went through my head where I was like, is he going to be like, next time he sees them, is he going to be like, dude, what? Yeah. Would you do that? And they're like, that's for leaving the toilet seat up or whatever he did back on the ship.
I was like, what the hell kind of beam job is that? And, you know, do not, Dr. Agnes, you're not in charge of beaming people down on the surface anymore, because that was terrible. I knew they needed, I guess they needed a way to get him in the clinic or whatnot and have that storyline. But I just thought, maybe they could have beamed him in the middle of the street and get hit by a car or something, but have him actually suspended.
Or he could have gotten mugged. Yeah.
Right. Or have him three stories in the air. It just seems a little bit like, whose idea was that?
You know? Yeah. It would have been funny if they're like, oh shoot, Rios died. And they're like, oh, I guess, you know what, next time, from now on, I'm going to make sure to beam people on the surface rather than just, you know, wherever.
Yeah. Or maybe if he was on the fire escape itself and maybe you didn't realize and lost his balance and fell down a flight of steps or something, I would buy that more, right? Like,
yeah, or next they're going to beam him into a wall and he's just going to wake up and be like, oh, you dicks, I'm dead now.
Yeah, he's in a sewer's pipe or something, you know, it's like, thanks a lot. So no, I was kind of like, what is that about? But you know, it just set up the next story, which was this Dr. Teresa, which was really a highlight for me watching her scenes and the two of them kind of go back and forth. I thought she was amazing. Did I mention that I thought she was amazing?
Man, that little red heart on your shirt is growing, let me tell you.
All right.
Yeah, but I did notice, I was like, is this doctor flirting with him? Because she totally was. Usually doctors, they like sit down, they talk to you, but she's like, so what? The room is spinning? Well, you know, do you need me to catch you? Or like, she was just like totally like leaning in and coming in close. And then afterwards she plays a little hard to get, but then she leans back in a little more. I'm like, this is highly inappropriate for a doctor, I think.
Yeah. I don't know, but we got to get the address of that clinic and see what's going on with
it. Yeah, just to investigate.
It's not too far away. It's literally right around the corner.
Because you know, even if she and Rios end up having a thing, that's okay, because we're 2 years before they even meet. So we're fine.
Right. Right. I'm not stepping on any toes.
Nope. He's stepping on your toes, Ciroc. 2 years from now, that punk. He's down with OPP, that guy.
No, I thought she was a great actress. She's good enough, and the amount of material they gave her, obviously they have more in store from them. They also ended on their abduction and being arrested. So she's more than a two-parter in this particular storyline, it seems to me, because she is that excellent. But there were other people that were shining as well. I thought this Gore Queen is like, she is really amazing at her facial skills and the kind of terror that she's able to project, you know, from, you know, being somebody who literally doesn't have the Borg backing her. So it's like, there's no army standing behind you. And yet she still projects as if there's serious consequences.
She's still intimidating. Yeah.
Right. Right. And I think that's great acting on the part of this woman that's playing this Borg Queen. She's fantastic. Every time I watch her, I'm like, she's so terrifying. Like I can easily see her, you know, getting horror movies after this and playing some kind of, in some horror films or whatnot, because she's that kind of a...
You know what I was thinking? She was giving me Disney Evil Queen vibes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where she's like, yeah, my prettier. And she was calling him my dear and all that. But when I was watching this, you know, like, I do picture you watching stuff oftentimes. And I was thinking, like, right now, Ciroc is getting a good taste of what the Borg Queens are like. And I was just thinking, man, he's going to like this. And I just wish he could see Star Trek First Contact, which was the first Next Generation movie on their own, where the Borg Queen has a couple incredible scenes with Data, you know, with Brent Spiner. And I was thinking, man, if Ciroc likes these scenes, I can't wait until one day he sees the Borg Queen blowing on Data's arm and him going, ooh. I mean, I don't want to give any too many spoilers there, but it's an unbelievable scene. But yeah, I figured you would enjoy that one because it's good stuff. And when she was just crawling around on her hands and someone to be afraid of you and you have no legs, like, you know, and no abdomen. And even when she was like, they're like, what do you want? And she says, well, first of all, I want legs. My first thought was, she wants legs. She knows her, you know, whatever. And then so on. It was a very musical episode for me. There was the California Dreamin'. There was that one. Oh, there was also when Picard says to Agnes, he's like, you know, you're going to go to halfway to hell, but I don't recommend it. Now I was thinking, like, she's going halfway to hell. Yeah. No.
This is really degenerated, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about this. Clearly, Ryan's been assimilated with bad music.
That was all good music. That was just poor renditions of good music.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I'm not the biggest AC/DC fan, actually.
No, but that's funny. That's funny. I'll give you some of those those ties. But no, I was not thinking all of those songs that you were thinking. I was thinking more about just the performances, her crawling on the floor and looking like a spider woman or whatever. That I thought that was kind of creepy and
totally
intimidating, kind of a horror film kind of vibe to that. And I did like the moment I keep bringing this up, but Dr. Agnes Girardi is a fantastic actress.
Unbelievably good, right?
She is supremely good. And when she goes through the whole getting plugged into the Borg and getting her emotional database being tapped into or hacked, and she words and mouths out those scenes where she's starting to say, okay, now she's in humor. And I thought, she said, humor room, knock, knock, don't bother. Just... I thought it was the best thing, just full of mirrors for useful deflection. And I thought, wow, this girl is amazing, because she was able to, in her facial expressions, go from humor to sadness and to, you know, all of these vulnerable things that were well expressed in her performance. I thought she is just like, she's amazing.
Yes, I agree. I keep being reminded, and even more so, that this Alison Pill is an amazing actress. And I keep just, I don't know why I keep being surprised by it. Like, at some point I should be used to it, but it's like, it just keeps hitting you like a blunt object, like, holy crap, this is a good actress. The other one that did it for me very much so in this episode was Rafi, played by Michelle Hurd. There were a few times, one was comedic when, whatever it was, Seven of Nine says, we'd like this cellular frame or something. And she goes, still a picture. Like, it was just this tiny little, still called a picture, just a tiny throwaway line, because if it's a funny line, you want to hit it hard. You want to say, it's still a picture or whatever, and hammer it up. But she's smart enough to just throw it out there, just still a picture. And it was funnier that way. Also, when I thought that she really put on an acting clinic was, I put in capital letters that it was great acting in my notes, was when they were about to leave. Seven of Nine and Rafi were about to leave together. And Seven says, she says, well, don't you want somebody, you know, you just had your friend die. Don't you want someone to talk to? And Rafi says, what I want is to figure out how to fix the timeline. And then whatever else she says, but it was the way she's like, what I want. And clearly being in that state of mind where you're not really being very reasonable. You're just processing this immense pain. And you're just like, what I want right now, you know, and it's hard to explain, but she does it. You know, we all recognize that moment in our lives and that feeling. And if somebody else is feeling like that, you also recognize, just be like, okay, cool, whatever you want. Let's just do that and not talk about this right now, you know?
Yeah, I want to say I too felt like Michelle Hurd has stood out exceptionally well in just her performance she gives time and time again now, because she seems so natural and real about herself. So I buy whatever she's selling when she sells it. And in this instance, the scene where the two of them were trying to get that picture together on the rooftop of this Mark Ridge Tower, when that little comedic scene went down, I think she said, well, Seven of Nine said something to the extent of, well, people actually like me in this time period or something, right?
And
Rafi has the perfect exit line. As she's walking away, she's just like, yeah, you in 2024 should get a room or something, right?
Yes, that was exactly it. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Beautiful delivery. Way to undercut the moment. Like, yeah, you know, you're feeling yourself. You know, we'll just leave you here.
Yeah, great. Why don't you go have fun with this shitty year?
Yeah.
You and this shitty year go.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. That was very well written. And another really well written line, it's more like a good way to reference something, was when Girardi just says, watch out for butterflies. And that's in reference to the butterfly effect. And it was not on the nose. In, you know, some people might say, hey, be careful about the butterfly effect. Well, what's that? Well, you know, and they walk you through it. But at this point, we all mostly know what the butterfly effect is. And so her just saying, watch out for butterflies, I thought that was a much better way to write it. And I definitely made a note of that, because it makes us make the connection, which makes us feel smart rather than, you know, showing off how smart she is or how smart they are. She just gives us a little reference and we all get it. We go, ooh, good point. Watch out for butterflies. Yeah.
The other time I think that going back to Rafi, that I love the scene she gave is when Elnor died and she confronts Picard about what the hell's going on. You guys chose the Borg Queen over him, this and that. And so I thought that scene, she really challenged Patrick Stewart in that moment. And they had a couple of moments where they did close-ups of the two of them. And I thought she was like holding her own, standing toe-to-toe, really forcing Picard to think about whether he's making the right decisions or whether he's acting selfishly. All of those kinds of emotions were being exchanged in that dialogue. And I thought that she just really brought the house to Picard in that moment, because she's like, you know, this is what I'm thinking right now. And damn it, I'm pissed. I seem to be the only one pissed off about Elnor dying. Right. And, and she wore that pretty heavily. And I thought that was a great, really great.
Yeah. She's thinking, am I really the only one that gives a shit that one of our friends just died? But I felt like Michelle Hurd, to piggyback on what you're saying, I felt like she was really there in that moment. Yeah.
She was locked in.
She took it there. She was there. And it's the kind of performance that the actress would need to recover from once the scene is done. It's not like, okay, you know, now do, it's like, cool, we're chained into a different scene or we're resetting. Great. Cause she needs some time to bring it back up to normal human town. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like she really went, she was able to be there emotionally. It was really powerful, really good.
Very present in that moment. You know, little nitpick, they said that they had to go to this Mark Ridge Tower because it was the highest point in LA.
Yeah, I was wondering if that's real or not.
No, it's not. Snoop's house is the actual highest
point in LA. Ladies and gentlemen, oh my goodness, you guys. Why would you wait so long to drop that gem on us? this is A plus material.
I've been waiting.
That was so funny. Elnor is literally dead right now. Okay.
that's great. No, but you know what I also thought was kind of interesting in this episode was their whole wardrobe. Like, hey guys, let's dress. And so it's like if somebody told me to dress 400 years ago, like right now, go run into your closet and try to dress up from the 1605.
I'd be like, I don't know, a trench coat and slippers. What do they wear 400 years? Blankets, like a pillowcase.
Yeah. Do you have like a wig and a you know, and all these
white
shirts? Yeah. Do you have one of those just laying around, a ruffly shirt that comes out to here? I mean, it's like literally, come on, you couldn't put together an outfit for 400 years ago under any circumstances, no, just digging through your closet and find, oh, let me just put this together. That'll make it like the Renaissance.
I was going to say, I might be able to, because I've been to some Renaissance fairs and our good buddy Michael Kenyon Rosenberg actually sewed me a vest or a thing. Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's 400 years or if that's 1,000 years or 200 years. I don't really know. I mean, I'd be like, hey, I'm going to put on my Renaissance garb. And then we go 400 years and like, this guy's wearing stuff from 100 years ago. I'd be like, I don't know.
You know,
that was so 4 years ago.
Exactly. So I thought that was funny. And then so just that whole little wardrobe moment, I was thinking, yeah, that's hilarious. Let me just rip this badge off of this. Let me rip this patch off of this shirt. And now it'll match in. It'll blend. Very funny to me. Just a little humor there. Did like a couple of the lines that the Borg Queen dropped too. She said, backward to go forward, shatter to mend, the past is now, you know, as they were going through this time travel thing. I just thought those were like some pretty interesting words, because the opening credits have this shattering glass in the opening credits, right? So I just thought that was kind of a call to the shattering of that greenhouse or whatever that glass is in the opening credits. So just using the language there kind of brought some of the imagery to mind. But I did want to talk a little bit. I don't know how much time we have. I did want to talk about The Watcher and The Watchers.
I mean, The Watcher made me think of The Lord of the Rings, The Watcher at the Gate, but everything makes me think of Lord of the Rings. So I'll just move on from that.
So The Watchers are actually a real thing. They are the fallen angels that are talked about in the Book of Enoch.
Oh, really? And interesting.
Yeah. It's one of the books that are not essentially canonized in the Bible, but that are part of the Apocrypha. So the Book of Enoch, which incidentally Ethiopia is in possession of the oldest copy of the Book of Enoch, references the Watchers. And that's where the biggest knowledge of the Watchers are. They're given names in this Book of Enoch. They all have different names, and they're essentially the fallen angels that inhabited the earth many years ago. And there's a whole bunch of mysticism about it. Each one of them taught humanity or mankind different things, like fire, like astrology, like weapons making, like agriculture. So supposedly each one of these watchers are responsible for humanity's knowledge in these various categories. So just for, you know, for people's edification, if they want to go looking up some of the background about the Book of Enoch and the Watchers, to kind of do your own digging and research to find some of that stuff that's interesting.
I'm still recovering from your Snoop joke, but dude, like, like I caught myself smiling from that a couple of times, but that's really interesting. I wonder if there will be some kind of parallels to what you're saying throughout this season. So we'll definitely check back on that, because that's really interesting. Whatever you know about the Book of Enoch and the Watchers, it would be really cool to kind of compare and see if they go along with it, or they kind of diverge and go in their own direction. Right. That's cool.
So just for reference, also biblical reference, the Book of Enoch is in the time period before the flood. It would be preceding Noah. So this is essentially Noah is supposed to be descended from these, from Enoch.
Okay.
So yeah, that's where time-wise it comes in, that particular period. And just a little bit more further information. When the Dead Sea Scrolls were recovered and they were found, which is the oldest version of the Old Testament, so the Hebrew Bible, right? The Hebrew Torah. The oldest Torah is the Dead Sea Scrolls. Mm-hmm. Now, when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, it was fragmented and it only had certain references to it. One of the references in the fragments referred to the Book of Enoch. Wow. And it was because of that reference that they were able to cross-check it with other ancient documents and biblical texts to be able to verify that this particular translation of this Hebrew Torah, of the original Torah, which is the Dead Sea Scrolls, was authentic. And basically because of its connection to the Book of Enoch.
Wow. See, you guys, You didn't know you were getting taken to school. Sirach knows everything about almost everything except Star Trek. Right. We're catching him up on Star Trek. We just have a couple minutes left. I do want to make one quick reference. It kind of just hit me, was that the kid's name was Ricardo. And I can't help but wonder if that wasn't in reference to Ricardo Montalban, who played Khan in Star Trek II. There are very few coincidences, but I'll bet you there's something there. But that's really cool. Glad they did that.
And the other thing is, really quickly, I didn't see it, so you correct me if I'm wrong, but Rios did not get his comm badge back at the end of this episode, right?
Right. Actually, it showed that either he left it deliberately or is accidentally, but the comm badge was left on the table, which I actually, that was the last note I put that I said, that's really smart, because then they can find him, find and track that down and then go from there. Maybe they meet the kid, or maybe, you know, whatever it is, but it's kind of like leaving a little trail of breadcrumbs. So I really liked that element there.
Yeah.
And I did think it was super funny when he was eating those peanut butter cookies and be like, well, there you go. Boy, I was just kind of like, I want a peanut butter cookie. I got some comm badges. I'll make a trade with you right now. I don't need the whole plate, hopefully, but you never know.
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, they showed Los Angeles in a pretty bad state. They showed the Hollywood Hills with the Hollywood
on
sign.
Fire. And
fires everywhere.
Yeah, well.
And they mentioned no food, no breathable air. And I'm like, the only thing they missed were the gas prices.
Yeah.
That was the only thing they missed. But pretty much everything else was a very poor picture of Los Angeles.
So what that means, everybody, is go to the store and stock up on food and stock up on air like they did in Spaceballs. Remember when they cracked over this like Perrier?
Yeah.
Stock up on Perrier, man. We got it because we're about to run out soon. That'll make things better, is if everybody rushes to the stores.
Yes.
Let's give a very special thanks to a few people, namely Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Phil Victor Arukin.
Arukin.
Yvette Blackman, Homer Freezy out where? Somewhere in
New Yeezy.
Eve England, everybody knows, is out in Wales. Dr. Anne Marie Siegel, who knows? She's all over the place. Titus Moeller is always in the same spot, hanging out, being cool. Mr. Tim Baum, who you know and love, Grandpa One. Darlena
happy
Marie.
Birthday.
Yep, happy birthday, Darlena Marie. Mr. John Mann, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Joe Balsarati. Tierney C. Diekman. We have Ryan Galloway, Christopher Collins, Erica Strom, and Amy Renee Haynes. And of course, a very special thanks to Dr. Susan V. Gruner. That's the one. Stick around, everybody. Some of those will be here on the other side on the free-for-all. And until then, here comes the free-for-all. Wait for it. Always remember the seventh rule.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the seventh rule. I'm Sirach Lofton here with Ryan T. Husk, our host. And we also want to welcome Ryan Galloway to the party.
Hello.
We have Eve England out in Wales. Make sure you don't stop. Eve England. I can throw that one there for the recording. We've also got Mr. Golda Scott in the house, rocking the Gilmore Girls.
You lead, I'll follow.
And very appropriate for this episode, the Boar Queen, Tierney C. Diekman, rocking the green St. Paddy's Day beanie, looking great. All right. And we have Melissa Longo with an excellent background. Got to watch this episode. We've got another Borg joining us. We got TJ Jackson Bay.
Hey, hey.
In the house, hey. Missouri. Also want to welcome Homer Freezy from New Yeezy. Oh,
whoa,
did the you hand see
that?
Yeah,
that was fancy.
Oh, wow.
Throwing up gang signs now, Homer. I didn't.
Oh, man. Oh.
Should have rated those first.
And of course, we have the lovely Dr. Anne Marie Siegel in the house.
Oh, that was fun. All right, let's talk about this episode. Let's start with Anne Marie Siegel, Doctor.
I don't know what to say. It was so amazing. I just can't even. And that Borg Queen crawling scene, just so, oh my god.
So
and then,
cool.
And then my other favorite part was the Rick and Morty drop, like name drop, which was so cute since Mike McMahon.
I missed that. What was that?
On oh, it. Yeah.
When
Where was that?
In that like hospital or the clinic, and that boy like takes I don't remember, a cookie or something. Anyway, yeah. And then he like won't give the badge back. And then his mom or aunt or whatever. Sorry, I haven't watched it in a few hours. It's been a busy day.
Or at all. you just read the Trek movie review or something.
Yeah. No. Oh my gosh. No. Anyway.
Well, the boy's name was Ricardo, right? He was Ricardo, right?
Yeah. And she's like, you can't watch Rick and Morty unless you do something.
Oh, that's so cool. I missed that.
Isn't that so
Your homework
cute?
Or something, yeah.
Because Mike McMahon is a Rick and Morty guy. So adorable.
Oh, I didn't see that. That was a good little drop right there. Yeah. We missed that.
It's such a nice touch. And then I was even like taken aback by the end credits for this season are just so spectacular and foreboding. I'm really into it. I love it so much.
Music is unbelievable.
I don't really think end credits that much, so I have to check that out too.
All of it.
Oh god,
he skips the credits.
I mean the credits,
I watched the original opening credits, but the end credits I don't really pay attention to as much.
Oh, of course
I need to.
Oh, and the sound effects when the ships were shooting at each other were unbelievable. So good. It was reminiscent.
They were good. Yeah.
it was reminiscent of the first time I heard the Defiant shooting its pulsing phasers. I was just really impressed by it. Ryan Galloway, have you seen this episode? What'd you think?
I watched it late last night, so still catching up on some sleep, but no, I really enjoyed it. Thought it was cool how Agnes was hooked to the Borg Queen to kind of revive her.
Yeah.
And just kind of cool how they did that, connecting and repairing the ship and going back into only, well, 2024, so only 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
As well. So yeah, I thought it was quite well done. Quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. Ryan, by the way, is out in Canada, everybody. So he's got a very interesting perspective on things. He gets to look at things from above.
Yeah.
So
great.
So
Ryan.
Oh yeah. What did I do with it? I think it fell behind the desk. So I'm safe.
Oh yeah.
did this episode sell you on the idea of coming to LA 2024?
Maybe not.
It's like a visit LA infomercial.
Yeah, right.
Maybe not that part of LA, but LA in general, maybe.
Yeah, book your trip to Hollywood 2024.
Yeah.
Get mugs.
Already done.
Fires.
All off of fire exits.
Get mugs.
Yeah.
Get arrested.
Our scenic sanctuary district.
It would be nice. Yeah. You love it.
Yeah. I was there back in 2008 for a hockey game with a friend in Disneyland and Universal and enjoy the city. Yeah.
It was the Ducks versus who?
It was actually Kings versus Rangers.
Okay. Ooh.
Rangers out there.
In LA.
New York
versus
LA.
Yeah. All right. Good game.
Melissa Longo, when was the last time you went to a hockey game? Or you could talk about McCartney.
I could do both. I've never been to a hockey game.
Yeah.
And the last time I watched Picard was the first time I watched Picard, and that was this morning. And can I just say, I love the Borg Queen. She's pretty spectacular. Like Anne-Marie said, the crawling was, I was just like, oh my gosh, she's magnificent. and
Maleficent.
Then Agnes. Yes, yes. But Agnes playing off of her is fantastic too. She can hold her own against the Borg Queen, so don't underestimate Agnes. And I really like this episode. I like the clinic where Rios landed in. That was fun.
Yeah, a real party.
It was really cute.
Landed on space.
No, but I mean, it felt like real life, and you know, there's there's an honesty to this season that I really find refreshing in the way they're telling these stories. I love it when Seven lands where she lands and the little girl asks, "Are you a superhero?"
That's a nice touch.
So cute.
So cute. Yeah. And yeah, I'm enjoying this season. And Rafi and Seven, I love, and Seven's jacket. Shit balls. I mean, holy snarky balls. so good. I do have one tiny, teeny tiny nitpick, and that's only with television across the board. A lot of sci-fi shows tend to slip into 2020 or 21st century dialogue and the way they speak,
right,
or the way they use language. And I would like to see more affected dialogue that would represent a time more in the future of somebody who is not of now. So, but that's my only nitpick. But I'm loving it so far.
Right. Sirach, Star Trek back in the day went out of their way to keep all elements of today's vernacular out of the scripts, right?
Yeah. They didn't even like conjoined words, for example, like where, you know, you couldn't say don't if it's stop. Do not. they were very adamant about making sure that the language was specific. Right. And yes, I do think that they've slipped into some of the language that we use today and still carrying it. Like, I don't know, people are going to still say shit when something happens 500 years from now. I don't know. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But, you know, maybe mix it in with some other futuristic words that we've never heard terminology that we haven't been used. Yeah. know, so especially when you have the opportunity to meet so many other varieties of races of people, so that you would have incorporated a Romulan curse word or a Klingon curse word or something else, it might become more popular in the long run. Right. Yeah. So I don't know.
Go Umox yourself. Instead of
all right, watch your filth, young lady. Although, what the heck did we do to deserve that?
We beat that out. Holy cats.
All right, we gotta clean this. We gotta clean this up and go wholesome. Goldu Scott.
Sorry.
you're our most wholesome guy here.
I'm the wholesomest one out of the whole bunch. I couldn't get over how cool that tricorder was. You gotta talk to old Doug Drexler about that one. I don't know if that was him or not, but that tricorder was amazing. Ball. Flipped open to the one flat screen. Yep. Rafi had it pulled back so it was flat.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like somebody had like their phone stacked up like three times really deep. I thought that was really cool. And that Borg Queen crawl. And it was funny how when she's finally like asking for her demand, she's like, first off, I want some legs.
Yeah.
Second off, I'm tired of crawling around. I'm tired of this. And then I don't know how spoilerific, but I think that Elrond, or you guys messed me up with his name, getting Elmo. Sidelined. Yeah, Elmo getting sidelined so early, being the only dude with pointy ears around LA with his eyebrows sticking straight out. So I thought that was logistically very smart. But yeah, it's a great episode.
Oh, I was thinking unless they're going to do the headband thing like Tuvok did. Yeah.
Pop his ears back in his hat. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I love particularly, I really did love the Rio stuff because, you know, you've got this smooth, like since we've known him, smooth, suave, getting in and out of stuff. What's the first thing he does? He falls down a fire escape, just face plants on the sidewalk. And then the rest of it is just him catching up, trying to.
Well, was that really his fault, though?
It wasn't, but I mean.
Sirach went on a tear about that earlier.
Yeah.
Have we ever really seen that? I mean,
you're not in charge of beaming me up if that
ever again.
Walk away from the controls.
Yeah. I'm walking from wherever I am to LA from here. Get all Uber in. I don't know about Uber, I guess. I got lost.
Every time I have to be beamed, it'll be very specific. Beam me to the ground level.
Because you like hit the fire escape and then like flipped around and like hit them both on the way down and just
oh my god.
And it ruined the cool cool cover song that we're listening to.
Yeah, you're worried about that song.
Well, because that had Ryan more effect. It had like the song
check playing, the song
and you're loving it, and then it stops for that because that's
the yeah funny
effect. Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of beaming, what do you think, Eve England?
Yeah, I mean, it was just amazing. It's just so edgy. I just love how edgy this new season of Picard is. It's just, you know, it's got cussing in it. It's got, you know, extreme violence by way of start, you know, from last week when they slit everyone's throats. I mean, that was quite shocking to see in a Star Trek show. But I just love how they just really did they've made this alternate world just so different. And then now that they've gone back to LA, it's just so much variety, so many different things to appreciate. And I think, as Melissa said, it really is just a breath of fresh air. I think it's just so unlike so many other things that we've seen. And it almost made me think this is probably what, you know, Deep Space Nine would be, I think, if they made it now. It's sort of just gone back to something. Yeah, it's just so edgy, and it's not afraid to do the bold things. You know, it's got really good humor. That scene with Alison Pill doing with her eye twitching was just sublime. And I was like I realized I was holding my breath. And then by the end, I was like, oh God, you know, that was just incredibly intense. You know, it's got the intrigue. It's like, you know, we've gone back to 2024. You know, is there going to be some, I know it's obviously got the Sanctuary District, but is it going to link back to the Bell Rites and Deep Space Nine in some way? Maybe. It's just got so much in it. I mean, and I just love when Rios fell down within the wrong place. It just reminded me of it just reminds me of the 2009 film where they had Kirk in the tubes. And I just thought, because you don't see that very often, as we said, you know, they always beam into exact right places, but surely that must happen all of the time. I just love seeing this.
Good call.
Yeah, so I just thought that, unless it was kind of funny when he first did it, but then when I saw how serious it was, I was like, okay, that's not good news. But when it first happened, I was like, that's quite funny. But yeah, it just had so much to it. And I can't wait to watch it again, actually. Just to get more of the detail that I'm sure I missed. So yeah, absolutely loved it.
Obviously a sadist. Cool. The furthest thing from a sadist is Tierney C. Deekman. Any thoughts on this episode?
You sure about this?
No.
He's got his all bagged next week.
It does say Borg Queen on there.
Lots of thoughts.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, Borg Queen crawl. Magnificent. I'm very glad that we all have a lot of, at least so far, similar opinions on this that I had too, of the vernacular it's falling into that same category again. And I want to call them, and I'm not sure how appropriate this is now that he's kind of in the not so okay doghouse, but Whedonisms. Of everything has to be flipping quippy. Why? It doesn't. It just, okay, we get it. It's cute. They're fun. Look how human they are. But this is an intense situation. They're not going to be quippy all the time. We don't always need comic relief. And I think that's the biggest drawback I have from the new Star Trek to old Star Trek. You know, it's hard for me to take it seriously when it's constantly making jokes on jokes on jokes. It drives me nuts. Some of them land, they're darn good, but it's just, don't keep trying and hope that, you know, 70-30 will land and the rest are just okay and you don't remember them.
Was original series like that too? I feel like original series was like that a little bit. Definitely none of the ones in the middle.
But I guess it flies with me with the original series because the whole thing is campy because that was kind of television at the time. Mm-hmm. And also original works a little better for me knowing what actual Navy ships are, and it has a better actual, more accurate Navy feel in a lot of ways, in a more industrial sense. So it's a toss up, but either way. So this episode in particular, I love hate. If this is another, like the last few series, I might skip this on a binge through because
wow.
I know that sounds bad, but if you look at Voyager, Tuvok Durag, and I thought the same thing of, all right, we've done away with our pointy-eared friend, which shenanigans could easily bring him right back.
Oh, they will. Sure.
We'll get there, but I would skip the future time travel, everything episodes, depending on how I'm feeling with the watch through, because sometimes they're just flippin' insufferable.
Mm-hmm. They're my favorite.
Yeah, me too.
They're good. Don't get me wrong. They're great. And sometimes extremely entertaining and very, very necessary for the plot. I mean, when Q goes 2024, my first thing is, oh crap, this is Bell Riots. This is when Cisco didn't replace Gabriel Bell.
Good.
This is the timeline. And
that's
then went
back to
the Irish unification and everything else. And then they go into LA and there's a sanctuary district. I'm going, this is not good. And yeah, so it has, they're very meaningful episodes, but sometimes they're just impossible to watch. Mm-hmm. But this has some great things, regardless of the cliches. Allison Pill killed that performance, you know.
Allison Kill.
Seriously. I didn't necessarily see her as fitting into a Star Trek type series when she was first cast, but she is just killing it over and over. And maybe that's why it wasn't, she did more of the indie stuff, you know, Scott Pilgrim, that Dan in Real Life, I think was one she was in. She's done really beautifully. And the Borg Queen in this is still living up to Alice Creed, Susanna Thompson. I mean, she's just awesome. So lots of good things. Every time they plugged her in, I wanted a USB noise, though.
Or like the Apple boom.
Yep.
By the way, nice necklace, Tierney. She's got a cool Klingon necklace, everybody that can't see right now.
Yeah.
Looks this really is awesome.
One of my
and it's got green in there.
It does. That was specifically why I wanted to wear it.
Right. Well, speaking of green and Borg stuff, TJ Jackson Bay. Yay, everybody that's green? Listening in, he's half Borg right now. So I guess that's all Borg. Okay.
So first of all, I'd like to log a complaint with the queen. Like, we need to get her above 8% because when I got assimilated, she promised me that I wouldn't have to wear glasses anymore. my implants itch.
Implants itch. I'm not touching itch. That one.
I enjoyed this episode, and I'm interested to see, you know, how the storyline continues to develop. I'm kind of the opposite. When they go like back in time, like my favorite Star Trek movie is probably the one with the whale, Star Trek IV. The they go back to the 80s, I believe it was. And
100%.
The Voyager episode that we've been, you know, referencing, I enjoyed that one quite a bit. And so I'm interested to see, you know, how they develop the story with this extended time over multiple episodes where they'll be, you know, in 2024. But I got to tell you, it won't be believable to me unless they walk by a TV that has Star Trek on it.
I thought of that too. Have they seen Star Trek in 2024? Yeah. They must have.
They would have had to.
I mean, they need to, if you want to make a DS9 reference, play an episode on the screen and have them watch it.
Good call.
They're pretty spot on about our future. I enjoyed the scenes with the Borg Queen as well, and you know, when she was, you know, crawling around towards Agnes, you know, I thought it was interesting. We're talking about the music they played, the Borg theme, doing that, and like I was just like, and it was, you know, kind of ominous, like, and it was, you know, just really, really neat, well played scene. The actors did great. The music was great. And it was just fun. And she just is like, you know, allow me. And she, you know, hooks herself up since she's out of the container now.
Yeah.
She's taking over the ship. And
she's like, you know, I got this.
I enjoy kind of like her little monologue playing through, like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to eliminate these threats over here for you so you can quit shooting at us. And she just, you know, does away with it right away. You know, so, you know, I thought it was a pretty fun episode. And I'm just kind of eager to see, you know, where it goes from here.
You also noticed that Dr. Girardi did her best Finding Nemo impression with the Borg Queen. They're both like, mine, mine, mine. Like when they were talking about the hands.
Yes.
I guess I was the only one that noticed that.
Oh, yeah.
Great. No, I did catch that.
I missed that, yeah.
Homer looks like I just made him nauseous. Sorry, Homer. What do you got?
Oh. Homer said, this is just my face.
I didn't think of Finding Nemo. Hey. Go sit on a stoop. I couldn't help but think of Star Trek IV as I was watching this. And I'm also seeing on the social media that there are some people that like Picard more than they like other series. And I'm like, is it because you've seen it before? Because we've seen this kind of thing going back to Earth, whether it's first contact with the Borg or whether it's Star Trek IV, the one with the whales. We have somebody getting hurt and their communicator not being available. So I was like, all right. But I'll say I enjoyed it, and not to go with something that's been said already. I'll say that actually I've got two things. One of them is that I'm really enjoying.
You have two Grogu's back behind you too, by the way.
Oh, just do you see them? Yeah. So I've got that guy and then that guy. So they're keeping an eye on me. So no one has to worry. But I like the scenes with Seven and with Rafi and like this under like this Seven is like feeling like a person. And so she's actually, you get the impression that she's liking being this new person that people actually like when she's telling this story of them as a couple trying to get up there, recreate this thing. And Rafi's kind of like, oh yeah, that's right. So you know that there's, I mean, they've covered this before. So I like that. We'll see where that goes. And then the other thing, I had two things, but in the interest of time, I'm just going to do one. Q, there's something going on. We don't know exactly. And it's different than in TNG when it's like, okay, we're going to take your powers away.
Yeah.
It's like, there's something, maybe he's coming to the end of his line or something like that, but he's not completely healthy for whatever reason. So I'm interested. He's unwell.
Damn it, Q. That's what he says. Yeah, all right.
That's what Q says.
I want to know.
He's causing the DMA.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I had a little bit of information for that really quickly. And that is just for everybody else. The Watchers are about the original angels that were sent to Earth. They were called the Fallen Angels. It is a biblical story. And the Watchers were supposedly the ones who mated with mankind to create the Nephilim, or these hybrid human/angel type of beings. And this is the reason for which the world was destroyed by a flood. So the whole reason for Noah building the ark is because of the Watchers and because of the Nephilim in the biblical story. So and all of that is found in the Book of Enoch, E-N-O-C-H. So just do your own homework on that stuff and you'll find some good stuff.
Right. And when Homer comes over, Enoch's to come in.
I do.
Homer, was that the second thing you were going to say? Was all this?
No, I'll just do the last one because you touched on it before, talking about the words, the phrases that are used. One thing that I hope I never hear on Star Trek again is like, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. Just stop. Let's just stop with that.
Yeah. All right. You heard it here first, everybody. The needle in a haystack thing, done. It ends in 2022. Totally. Moving on. Got to find something else. It's like finding a
bigger
tribble
magnet
in Station K9 or whatever that one was, right?
Yeah.
K7.
Deep Space Station K7.
All right, everybody. Yeah. Thanks very much for joining us. We got to run. Thank you to Dr. Anne Marie Siegel, Eve England out Wales, Homer Freezy somewhere, Tierney C. Diekman, Goldu Scott, Melissa Longo, TJ Jackson Bay, Ryan Galloway, Here comes Serac. Another one in the bag. We're going to have fun. It's virtual TrekCon 3. We'll see you all very soon. Always remember that there's seventh rule.